This is HPR episode 2326 entitled HPR Community News for June 2017 and is part of the series HPR Community News. It is hosted by HPR volunteers and is about 77 minutes long and carries an explicit flag. The summary is HPR volunteers talk about shows released and comments posted in June 2017.
This episode of HPR is brought to you by anhonesthost.com. Get 15% discount on all shared hosting with the offer code HPR15. That's HPR15. Better web hosting that's honest and fair at anhonesthost.com.
Hello, everybody. My name is Ken Fallon, and you're listening to Hacker Public Radio Community News for June 2017. Joining me tonight is...
Hello, it's Dave Morris.
Hi, Dave. I said earlier I've been away for so long that I barely remember how to do this anymore.
Yeah. It does seem to be quite a while, doesn't it? Well, these things happen, but it's good that we can manage to get this together. And my pal John JWP is away in the States, I think, just now. So it was just going to be me, and just imagine how horrible that would have been.
Yeah, it was nice actually to hear the show from another point of view, which is good. JWP is nice, although he's got a crappy network connection. That has to be said.
It probably was
worse before truncated silence came along.
Oh, there were lots and lots and lots. I actually did a bit of editing on that one to try and chop out some of the gaps. But he really needs to get that sorted.
He's a good guy. Had a really nice time over in Fostem, as you didn't bother coming over, Dave. No, it was really cool.
No, he's a good guy. He seems to enjoy Fosdem as much as we do, actually, doesn't he? He has a good time there.
Okay, for people who don't know, Hacker Public Radio is a community podcast, which means the shows are contributed by regular old folks who listen to it, namely the likes of myself and yourself. And if you're listening to HPR, consider giving us a show, introducing yourself, and we'll be sure to comment and give you ideas for other shows. So this show is scheduled once a month, and we basically do a quick roundup of what we thought of the last month's show, just to make sure that everybody gets some feedback on their show, and give you any other things that's been happening on the website or on the community mailing list or any shows that people are going or any announcements that they have. But we always start off by introducing new hosts, and because I butcher people's names so badly, this is usually delegated to Dave.
Okay, these ones are easy, though. We have our new hosts are Mongo and BJB.
And welcome to the network. So let's start with going through the shows, shall we? Episode 2304, using GNOME 3 for the first time, which was very... fortuitous, actually, given that Ubuntu have switched to GNOME 3. I don't think that had even been announced at the time the show was posted.
Yeah, I'm not sure, but it was very timely. It was an interesting overview, I thought, and it was from XFCE, I think. Shenzhen. So yeah, it's an interesting move.
Even Beezy had a comment there that the XF dashboard is a great show. I currently use GNOME and XFCE on different computers. If you like the dashboard from GNOME, you should check out XF-Dash for XFCE. It provides a GNOME-like dashboard experience. You just need to change the keyboard call XF-Dashboard instead of the normal XFCE launcher. Good tip there.
Yeah, I didn't know. He's obviously got much deeper into XFCE than I have. I've been using it for several years now, but that sounds cool. I've not looked into that one.
A little run through of XF Dashboard would be a good show, don't you think?
I think it would be a wonderful thing, yes. I can think of somebody who could do that.
Lost it, have I?
Okay, hint, hint, hint.
Hint, 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 nudge, nudge, there you go. Configuring a HP laptop for dual boot Linux and Windows 10, and this is from our new host, Mongo. And this was how to get GNOME 16.04 from Ubuntu to boot with Windows 10 Home. This was quite interesting, actually. Very good.
Yeah. It was a good first show, I thought, and there was some good stuff in here to get to GNOME from Windows and still keep a foot in the other camp. Is not a thing I've ever done personally, but it's good if you were doing that and were concerned about the consequences.
Yeah, I've been thinking about it. We haven't ever run a Windows machine here, and I've been thinking about just having a Windows 10 Home version or something, just to make sure that USB sticks and stuff read okay. But I usually end up sending it into running it on a remote Windows machine and just checking that it works there. So, but there you go. So we had two comments there. Steve said it was an excellent tutorial on how to get dual development environment working. If I ever need to know this or know somebody who does, I will send them here. And actually, I do know quite a few people in work who are dual booting, so this is a good show for them.
Absolutely. Mongo came back with a reply, which was, Steve, thanks for the comment. There seems to be a perception that Windows 10 is harder to deal with than previous versions, and it really isn't. I hope the show helps someone get started on a useful project. So that's good to know, actually. The impression that Windows 10 is difficult is very prevailing. So it's good to get somebody giving a slightly different view of it.
I think it's just a UI difference. What gets me about it is that you have this whole new UI, and then you drop down to like Windows 95 dialogues in certain places, you know. And then I also have the same thing with OS X as well, OS 10, where the different UIs of the application have not been updated. In you know, there's still dialog boxes from various different versions back. Widget libraries, that's what I'm meaning to say. Something that Linux have been accused of for years and years and years.
It's odd. You'd have thought that those sorts of things would have been designed so that they... Oh, excuse my neighbor's dog. He's having a bit of a play at that. You'd have thought they would all be using the same underlying, I don't know, files of specifications or something that made... You just switch one thing and everything would change, you would have thought. But
nope.
Obviously not.
It does not work like that. So we had... the following day was HPR Community News. You did a fantastic job, as always. Don't know why I'm bothering coming back at all, dude.
Yeah, we're trying to get rid of you. You do realize that. It's an undermining effort.
Feel free. So the next day was 2304 Bofang UV5R VHF UHF handset, which I am now allowed to say that I do actually physically own, and it is physically here because I checked the law, and in the Netherlands you are allowed to have it, but the battery has to be stored in a separate location. But I haven't powered it up, so there you go.
Right.
Yes.
Why must the battery be... You're not allowed to switch it on or something?
Yeah, what's you're not allowed about? To switch it on, but you are allowed to... you are allowed to physically have it.
Ah, all right.
Because there's also under the codes, if there is a civil disaster, anybody can operate a ham radio license. You don't need a license to operate if it's a license, life or death situation.
Okay.
So theoretically, okay, in those situations, you could use it. But I also know from some guys that they are actively monitoring the airwaves, and if you are broadcasting without a license, there was a guy who got, was it 10, something around, just picking numbers here, something like either 15,000 of a fine. He got his, and it was going to go up to some outrageous number if he did it for a second It was going to be €150,000 for the second offence.
So they're not messing about.
No, they're not messing about. I'll promise to record a show about that as well. But anyway, I'll just give you my rundown on this entire series. It's been absolutely brilliant. They walk through and everything has just shed loads and loads and loads of light on stuff that I had heard about, like squelch, and didn't really understand it. But absolutely been very, very helpful this whole series, and we can.
Yeah, I just wanted to say, I think I already said in previous ones that I was enjoying them much more than I thought I would. He's doing a great job of explaining everything, going through in such detail is brilliant. I'm almost tempted for such an amazing little device for £20 or something.
You know what? Why wouldn't you get one? They're not that expensive, right? I mean, indeed, if you can afford it. If you can't afford it, obviously fine. But if you could afford it, you know, grab one of them and you'll get a, in the UK, the technician, there's even an entry level technician license, which is like unbelievably easy to do. Then you're up and going, and you can talk to local repeaters and stuff. So, you know, when the zombies arrive, Dave, you'll be thanking me. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I've got a mat of cricket bats as well. I can't.
Yeah, Shaun of the Dead. Yeah, anybody who hasn't seen that movie,
it's a wonderful thing. Yes, just one of the brilliant
movie. Okay, following day we had 2308 everyday package operations in. Can you say this word?
Geeks.
That's the one. Geeks. Tlaki going through this Geeks. He's determined that everybody uses this.
He
won't be satisfied until he has taken over control of the world of this.
It does sound quite tempting, I must say. I'm just essentially lazy and don't want to change, but does sound pretty cool what he's talking about there.
I'm tempted to do it for things where you're managing distributed environments. So I can't help but be thinking about this as a solution for some of the stuff that I'm doing in other places, which I may or may not be doing shows on later.
Yeah, it certainly sounds like an interesting way of managing an operating system. So maybe he's right, we'll take over the world.
So comments, I left a comment about when he submitted the show, he had that there was no intro, but there was an outro. And I go, that can't be right. So, but I listened, and he had a new HPR theme done. So that's up there. Cool.
I think he did a great job, actually. I liked that very much. His whistling and singing of the theme was a gem. I see you captured it.
Yeah, it's awesome. Anybody can submit outros all you want, so long as there's even a write up about how the theme song, what it needs to be. So cool.
So Clackett says, theme song, cool, I can see it's linked, and he gives the URL of where you've put the thing. It's not live yet, and then he comes back, comment 3, and says, oh, it's there now, it's great, thanks. So he's obviously happy that his efforts have gone up there for permanent.
He's now in the big time. The royalty checks will be rolling in. Be Easy said, GNU Stow, please. I would love to hear an episode about GNU Stow. I hear good things about it, but haven't tried it. I would love to hear how your use of it.
And Clackett comes back and says, GNU Snow. See, I've got a touch of it now. GNU Stow in the pipeline. GNU Stow show. Oh, he's done that deliberately. Is in the pipeline. Pipeline visible, and then he's got an URL where he keeps his various show intentions. No promises on ETA or in what order I decide to tackle these subjects. The one I'm working on now is the history of video envelope formats. Ooh, will be.
So I would just like to say this. Every single one of those is you owe me a show, Clacky. Every single hashtag up there. Thank you very much.
I think he's actually, I think he's committing there in public. So
why would he do that? Has he never listened to the community news? Anyway, speaking of long-standing members of the community, John Culp Dragging Some Time, Crowdsourcing Accessibility, and very, very nice show about getting his lectures transcribed. Very good.
Yeah, yeah, an interesting idea, I thought, and I like the fact that you can effectively get
bribe people.
I was you could tell I was choosing my words carefully.
I was there, Dave.
But no, it's great that he can do this, and it's a great idea.
The only one thing I was thinking about with the MP3 split, which is a very good tool, I've used it before, but it does tend to be very brutal with its cutting off. So it will cut off right in the middle of like that exact second. It'll just cut it off. So I would have thought to leave a overlap of, you know, 5 seconds either side or 10 seconds either side, so that you could hear multiple segments. But I guess you could always click the one. You know, he has a play button, so you could click the minute previous and the minute after to get the full segments. But that's just an observation.
Yeah, yeah. It's I got a digitized vinyl record my son did for me. He's got my old record collection plus turntable, and he sent it. So I tried trying to divide it up into tracks. I couldn't find a simple way of doing it other than just going into Audacity and slicing where it looked like it needed to be sliced. So
there is in Audacity, there is somebody has done a show, Dave, and I remember at the time thinking, did we or did we not say this very thing, that we would, I have a archive project ahead where I want to do that very thing. And there was some way to split up the Audacity show notes. If I can find it.
Well, okay.
It's
well,
some years back now. But
I'll
yes,
go hunting
away.
For that then. I didn't remember it, but it wasn't. It was just doing one side of an LP was not too bad. But there's a bunch of others coming when he's got the time to do it for me. So so yeah, it would be nice to at least give me some hints automatically rather than me having to hunt through it.
Yep. So you said, hi John, a most interesting project with an ingenious solution. I like bio. Can you read your own?
I like bloviate, which was the word that he mentioned on the show. I like it too. In investigating its etymology, I found an article on Worldwide Words. My tongue's not working tonight. Where I often go for information on unusual words. I found this, which you might like, and they give him a URL on the weird words. Well,
and I refuse to read John's comment for the exact same reason.
So on the article, it mentioned bloviate, which is a sort of made-up word, effectively. And along with it, it mentioned some others. So John came back and said, absquatulate. Great page. I like the reference to the following words as well. Sockdolager, hornswoggle, and absquatulate. Got to start using those so I can. I'm not sure what sockdolager means, actually. Hornswoggle. You used to hear hornswoggle on cowboy films and stuff. I remember that. You two-time in hornswoggler and stuff. And absquatulate just means to go away. Some joke on, you know, you're squatting down, so you've got to stop doing it and go away type of thing, I think.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
These are great. These are great words.
I still think we should have like a entomology. Is that the word I'm looking for?
Etymology.
That's etymology. The money. Excellent.
It's good stuff. Yes.
Anyone who wants to start a series, feel free to do so. Thank you very much. HBR 2310, KDN Live Part 6, Workflow and Conclusion. And I would just like to thank Geddes personally for doing such an excellent job on that. And I would like to thank Seth Kenlon for writing the article in the first place. I think this was one of the best examples that I have of the Creative Commons working to full effect. Two very competent people in their own right doing justice to the work. So big thumbs up from me.
Yeah, it's really good. As you say, very well read and an excellent article telling me things I never knew I needed to know.
Yeah, exactly. All those things about, I don't know, cutting room floor and, you know, gold, different releases, director's cut and all that sort of stuff. Excellent. So the following day we had another in the series of the Bofang handset. And then the day after that we had troubleshooting websites with XAMPP. I would never have thought to use this, and this is by Frank. And that's Apache, MariaDB, PHP, and Perl. And while he was describing this, I was thinking, you know, actually, that is a very good idea, because I quite often do need to troubleshoot some of these, you know, these shared hosting places. And I just do it live on the box, and that has been my demise on a few occasions, I must must confess.
Yeah, it does seem like a good way of setting things up in a sort of sandboxed system to check it out and see how it behaves. Never had a need to do that really, but it's there's always going to be a time when you find you do something like this. Is be good to refer back to.
Yeah, excellent. Keep them coming, Frank. Good to hear him back. Then we had Tlatu talking about nilfs2. I had no clue that this existed and was found it a very interesting common topic, as did Folky. Thank you for a good show. I would really like to test nilfs myself. Could you write down some examples, please?
Yeah, it's, I knew nothing of it. Absolutely nothing of it. I was quite surprised that it was already on my desktop machine. So yes, that's something I want to go and investigate at very least at some point. So yeah, excellent.
Yeah, with file systems, I'm very happy to let other people do the investigation. And then when all that's done, then come back and try it on something non-critical.
Yeah, I know. It's don't have an immediate application, but I bet it would be fun to play with on a Raspberry Pi, for example.
Yeah.
So that would be something to think of.
Following day, Bad Caps and My Bill talking about repairing a computer's motherboard. And basically, he was able to fix it by replacing crappy capacitors. And this is the second show that we've had, Dave, where bad capacitors were the source of problems and people fixed it by fixing the caps.
Yeah, it's a thing to look for, I think, isn't it?
Do you ever hear about the cause of that? I think I heard on Big Clive, or was it Julian Iliad? Hold on one second. Julian Iliet, I-L-E-T-T. How would you pronounce that?
Iliet.
Islet? Yeah.
Islet, yeah.
He has a he was recommend. He was on the BigClive.com. They collaborate on a thingy, and then I went back and watched all his videos. And he produces an awful lot of videos, and I have not caught up yet. But he was saying, I just pasted that there into the chat there, so you can go to his YouTube channel. Anyway, he was saying that there was a few years back a bad run of capacitors on, and that some major manufacturer made a lot of dud capacitors that went after a year and a half, 2 years in service. They basically, the electrolyte dried up and they had to basically replace them. And so somebody else, either him or somebody else, was saying that the very, very first thing you should do if there's a repair is look at the capacitors and see if there are any domes on them, and then just replace all capacitors on the board, and you're more than likely going to be able to fix the device, whatever device it is.
Yeah, I've heard that too. People that throw away monitors and TVs and stuff, it's often some replacement capacitors will solve the problem. Electrolytics, as you say, because exactly, you can see when they go usually. Yeah, I had my previous workstation had a graphics card in it which suddenly went pop, literally one day, and that was all. I don't know quite why, but it was all of the pretty much all the capacitors on it, all the electrolytics had blown. The lids were off. I didn't repair it. I just went and got another one because it was time for an upgrade anyway. But you know, you could, as you say, it's pretty easy to see what's wrong and to fix it possibly.
Yeah. So Interesting. I wouldn't have considered repairing it up until now, but now that I've watched lots of videos and got myself a soldering iron and listened to Mr. X's soldering show, absolutely no reason why you couldn't try. And you know, it's not going to get any more broken, and if it does, you're going to have some fun breaking it more.
There's a thing I have pending, which is to try and get my old BBC Micro back working again, and the thing that fails on them is the power supply goes, and it's the electrolytics. I mean, they'll be dried out and rubbish anyway, even if they haven't popped. So you just go through the board and replace them all.
And they're usually quite big, so they're usually quite easy to solder. Yeah. So
yeah, I think those boards are pretty easy to desolder and remove, whereas NY Build's motherboard was a bit more difficult to deal with.
Yeah. So do you want to read your comment?
I said, thanks for this. Very interesting show, as always. The issue of the type of solder used on motherboards like this is something I've never heard about before. That means my recently bought Chinese Hakko clone soldering station will not handle it, I guess. Time for a cheap hot air gun, perhaps. Also, my knowledge of capacitors is at 1960s school physics level, so hearing more about what's out there now was fascinating. More shows like this would be most welcome.
And NY Bill recommended to me a good podcast on electronics, which I will just pause and get for you. Yeah, it's called The Spark Gap Podcast with Carl and Corey. So Spark Gap Podcast. And then their guys had a... Yep, they've done several shows about capacitors. So basically, you know, they seems to be an electronics meme that no matter what problem there is, it can be fixed by electronic capacitor, by adding more capacitors to any electronics project. And they had a guy on called James Lewis from Kernet Electronics to talk about capacitors in episode 25. So, very good show. They don't release shows very often, but they're quite good.
Okay, thank you. That's worth a check.
So, and my Bill replied to you, hey Dave, I grew up in the 1970s. I'm not sure you can tell me to get off your lawn. Okay, maybe you can, but I'll definitely stand at the edge shaking a fist. Joking aside, a lot of solder these days is going lead free. The stuff being used these days has a higher melting point. This can be an issue sometimes with something like a motherboard. It's densely packed, has multiple layers. All of these layers can dissipate the heat you're trying to apply to one component. Sit there too long and you start damaging things next to the component you're trying to replace. You need to get in, heat something up quickly, get out. The hot air station did the trick. However, it was an edge case for me. I get by just my soldering pen 99% of the time.
That's quite interesting, actually. Yeah, I've not really had dealings with things at that level of sophistication. Just simple plated through stuff, you know, is all I've ever really done. So some interesting points there.
Although he was saying as well, bigclive.com. Have you follow that?
Oh, I do. I'm watching him every day, pretty much.
He often goes on about how much he hates the lead-free solder. And
never use it. I don't use it. I've got some, and I hate it. And so I've got tons of more than I'm ever going to use of old-fashioned lead solder.
He also, when he's removing stuff, he'll tin it with lead solder and let it get mixed, and then slurp up both.
Yeah. That's a good thing, because it does get a bit more flux into the thing anyway, so that helps. Okay. So Jonathan Culp replied joined the discussion, comment number 3. The suspense is killing me, he says. Come on, man, don't leave us hanging. Did it work?
To which I replied, hey, my Bill, the reply to that needs a show in itself.
And I'm lost my place. Number 5, John says, I'll do a show next time. In that case, maybe next time I should do a 30-second episode where I ask Bill whether it worked or not. How does that sound, Ken?
It sounds absolutely awesome, John. Because we all know Jonathan Culp can't do a 30-second show. Never going to happen.
No. He suffers from the same thing I do. Yeah, and NY Bill says...
There you go.
Sorry, I did the last one, but never mind. Hey, John, had the motherboard in my backpack fixed for 2 months. The episode's recording started quite a while ago. I planned to give the thing back to Marcus when I saw him. Turns out he's quit his job here in New York and gone back to Florida. I talked with him in IRC and he told me to use it or give it to somebody else in the lug. I would have to pull apart one of my two desktops to test it. We'll see.
So we don't know, actually.
No.
My Bill, do not reply in the comments. What a taskmaster. Ken cracks the HPR whip. Great idea. That would make two more shows. Excellent. So on the following day, PenguinCon 2017 report. Look forward to these every year, actually. It's nice. And as Hook, as last year has been the tech event organizer for that.
Yes, yes. It's a shame.
But, well, you know, I mean, I think he's right. You know, you do a few years and then you want to try something else.
Yeah. No, it's just been interesting to hear his insight as an organizer. So it's being selfish saying that, I know, but still.
Cool. I've no doubt, though, that he'll still give us the reviews of PenguinCon.
Well, yeah, I was just realized that he'd said that he's I think he's already got his ticket for the next one. Perhaps he said, but he's certainly going to go to these in the future. Yeah. So, knowing him, he'll be telling us about it.
Cool. So the next day was part 6 of the Bofang. Nice thing. And then we had, oh my God, Dave. This one I needed several cups of coffee. Bash snippets, EXT glob, and secure copy. How does secure copy manage to extend glob patterns?
Yeah, right.
I'm not saying that in a bad way. I'm saying that this is what happens when you do like I say and actually answer people's comments with chills. You go down the rabbit hole. But it's actually very interesting because it did explain to me a lot of things that I've come across in the past, and it gave logical reasons for why it would happen.
Yeah, I hadn't appreciated how this worked. It was partly John Culp saying, you know, what's happening, and in his show it was him commenting on a show of mine, I think, wasn't it?
Exactly.
But yeah, he was struggling with this, and then Clackett mentioned that he was surprised what he could see of the way SCP worked, and that intrigued me a lot. I had to go and find out more about it.
And you did. Yes, you did. There will be.
Great time.
This will be one of these bookmarked by a very, very small number of people who will be very, very grateful to you.
Well, hopefully,
you can
anyway.
Just, you know. I know actually the use case where I came across this, where you have servers on the inside of a zone with a one-way connection out, or you're going through a particular machine and that machine only has like basic secured lockdown applications on it. There's no rsync. There's no, the only thing you have in your arsenal is secure copy. And these people will be thanking you greatly when they read this and figure out exactly what is going on.
So yeah, it's,
don't be afraid
it's an
to
odd,
these shows.
It's an odd thing. No, I find it enormously intriguing to find out how these work. And there's a sort of stubborn determination to try and find out why it doesn't do what I think it ought to do.
Would have given up way before this. Did I hear in that show that you opened up some source code to see what happened?
I did. I went and got the source code of SCP and poked around in it to see if I could find out why it was doing the thing it did. So this is, well, you know, how else
this
do you find out?
This is what we do for you here on HPR, folks. And, you know, last month you were commenting about why I do the Iron and Board shows, yeah? Can you imagine you host coming along thinking, this is the level of detail that they need to go to be opening up the source code, a secure copy. This is why I have to do these shows, Dave. I have to lower the barrier.
Okay. I get it.
No, I am actually, you know, professionally really glad that you did that, because it is an edge case, but it's an edge case that I have come across several times in my career, and it has bugged me, but I've worked around it either by manually setting up a script to copy one type first and then the next type next, and but it's been frustrating not knowing why, but I've never had the patience to actually go and figure it out. So thank you very much for that.
Well, you're welcome. So, do you want me to do? I'll do both these comments.
I'll read Jonathan's one. Okay, clarity. Well, sort of. Thanks for the follow-up episode, Dave. I think I understand it better now, but I might not. Just one of those things, you know.
And I said, clear as mud, smiley face. Hi, John. I hope it helped, if only a little. I got quite carried away by the investigation and perhaps shouldn't have brain dumped it all into an episode. It was quite fun, though.
No, I think that one, as I said, will be locked away. And again, on Hacker Public Radio, if I can imagine the number of likes on this would be quite minimal, but the people who did like it were really, really, really did like it. Okay, I'm not making any sense, but I hope you understand what I mean.
I think I know what you mean, yeah.
Thinking about my ThinkPads, and this was Swift 110, and wow, there must be an awful lot of ThinkPads in the States, especially if you can get them so cheap in Goodwill stores.
Yeah. I don't know how common they are here.
I don't see them anywhere over here. It's mostly Dells and HPs.
My son's girlfriend needed a new laptop to use. She's a doctor, so she is working in a hospital at the moment. She needed something she could easily lug around there, and she got a nice little ThinkPad. So it's a beautiful little machine. I mean, they're all really,
all
really,
really
well
sturdy and solid and
beautiful. Yeah.
Yeah, very nice. Clunky, boxy, but they're good, perhaps. But just nice technical feel to them. Anyway, good show. Next day, we had a minimal music site available on SourceForge and a rundown of his new machine. And I very much got the feeling that this was, of course, from Mac King USA. Sharing some tech like that, I had the feeling... the joy of explaining, hey, look, guys, I got this. Sometimes you're excited about tech and there's nobody around to talk to about it that will understand the level of excitement. And I did understand the level of excitement, so I was right with you. And more people should do that if your spouse or kids are not as super thrilled about the Raspberry Pi Zero that comes in. Feel free to do a show over here just telling us about how excited you are about getting your new kit.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. No, I fully sympathize with that.
And the Minimal Music site is actually a great project, but he should have some screenshots or demos or something up there, because I had to go back and look at the previous episode that he did in order to remind myself what he was trying to do with the Minimal Music site, which is a great little project.
I went and visited the link he has in the show notes, but wasn't entirely clear what under what circumstances I would want to use it. But I'm missing some information there.
I was thinking just of having a Minimal Music site for the songs that I've collected from either Tux Jam or CC Hates or Dave the Budcast. You know, I have a collection of now several hundred songs, and you know, just nice music, pop it up there, and then you could hear it.
That's a good idea. Yeah. Well, it seemed like a nice project. The way he was describing it, it sounded as if he put a lot of thought into it and written some clever stuff there. So yeah. It's on SourceForge, yeah, so we could go and look at the source if we want to. So, yeah, cool.
So we had the next day show JWP, Living Computer Museum and Lab. Was not aware of this. Very good idea. I like it very much. And you commented on?
This was fascinating, yeah. I loved hearing about this. I said, well, the first thing he mentioned, the Orc series. So I said Orc series and Deck Hardware. Hi, JWP. Most interesting show. I'd love to visit that museum. Thanks for the mention of the Orc series here on HBR. I should point out that it's a joint series being produced by BEASY and myself. The next episode is in early July.
Yeah, I did. I did scream down the train when I heard that one. But it's an honest mistake.
No. It's I was the last one to. Maybe the last one to do one, so yeah, it's yeah. But Be Easy's episode's coming up. So I said I was delighted to hear you talk about Digital Equipment Corporation, known as DEC. I spent a good bit of my work life managing a DEC VAX cluster running OpenBMS. This was a system used by students and staff at the university where I worked. We also had two alpha servers there later, one running OpenBMS and the other Digital Unix. I thought DEC stuff was great. He mentioned VAXs and OpenBMS and alphas, so that's why I mentioned it back.
I've used DEC stuff in the past.
Yes, it was great for its time. It was brilliant.
Pretty cool, yeah.
Yeah, it was a great operating system, and many of the ideas in it went off to be used in other things. All of the DEC people who had written VMS and built the clustering capabilities, which were groundbreaking, went off to work for Microsoft. So quite a lot of what turned into the various versions of Windows came from people with an OpenVMS experience.
That's the classic where Windows NT comes from, is the VMS one letter on, VMS WNT.
Yep. You could run Windows on the alpha servers too. Yeah, exactly. We never did, but you could do if you wanted to.
And BJB did a show on virtual EnvWrapper, and this was explaining the environmental process, and this also clarified an awful lot of stuff that I was never really completely 100% able to understand, get my head around. Although I think the show would also, Linux processes, EnvWrapper and Linux processes would be a good show title. But
I think we skipped over Mr. X's Bofang, by the way.
Oh, yeah, sorry about that. Part 7, yes.
Part 7, but yes, I think we said it just goes on and on giving. Just to mention on that one, the CTCS business absolutely boggled my mind. I never knew there was amazing. Such a thing.
Sorry, this is the radio thing where they have multiple people on the same frequency and they can tune out others because of the underlying tone that's on there.
Yeah.
I never really understood how that worked.
No, I never knew it existed. And so
I didn't, but I heard that in taxi cabs where you'd hear delivery people. You just cut off the last little bit you would hear cut off at the end of the transmission.
Yeah, that's amazing. The ingenuity that's gone into running all this stuff over radio is amazing.
Yeah, exactly. That's why, when the more I'm studying ham radio and stuff, the more, you ask somebody about ham radio, can you teach us ham radio? And then the natural thingy is, well, we don't know where to start because there are so many facets of it. It's very similar, I think, to the way people say, you're into computers. My husband's into computers, or my girlfriend's into computers. Yes, okay. that doesn't really give the same Venn diagram is quite large, if you know what I mean.
Doesn't guarantee an
overlap in interests.
No. It's the same in many, many walks of life, isn't it? Yeah. So, yeah, I found that one particularly intriguing and interesting.
Well, I think it's a brilliant idea just in general. I know we've been waffling on about how excellent these shows have been, but the idea of going through a menu of a device like that is just an awesome thing.
Indeed. So back to 2322 on virtual EnvWrapper. I enjoyed this. Eh?
You sound like you're doing skipping rope or something.
Of course, yeah. I like to get in trim while I'm doing this. See, the problem with where I'm doing this recording is in the extension I've got in my house, and that's where the cat tends to hang out, and she was just doing a thing. Just using her litter tray. Do you really want to know this?
Oh, that's for sure.
There are noises off, and the neighbor's dog, as you heard earlier on, keeps running out and having a bit of a bark and so on and so forth. So yeah, it's all human life is here.
Do you have like a Raspberry Pi, Arduinos, and motion detectors and all the rest?
No, not down here. I did at one point. I was trying to watch the bird feeder out there, but the Raspberry Pi is not really up to it. I need to get an enclosure and put it beside it and watch them there. It's a project for later, when one day.
Yep. But an excellent first show.
Yeah, really well done, I thought. The notes were brilliant, and the content was really good. I thought the explanation of environment variables was really, really good.
And clarified so much stuff to me that I could never really understand and never really put the effort into figuring it out either.
I knew this. I mean, I did know this, but I had never explained it in any of my talks on Bash and stuff. And I don't think I would have put it in the way that she did. And I don't think I would have done it as well, actually. So thank you very much for that contribution to the world of Bash and all that stuff.
Yep. And Be Easy says, great show, my follow-up to come. Thanks for an excellent show. I learned a lot about the underpinnings behind Python virtual environments and how programs like VirtualEnv Wrapper exploits them. You have inspired me to create a follow-up episode about how I create a virtual environment wrapper like experience for the fish shell. I don't know about you, Dave, but that sounds like you owe me a show right there.
Well, as I understand it, that show appeared in the pending queue within a day, I think.
And
very
then,
soon.
if it's on the server, it's a show.
indeed.
Man of his word. That's what I like.
definitely.
Not like these scumbags who say they're going to do shows and then don't for 10 years.
I've heard of those people.
I don't know who you could possibly be talking about. Yes, a show within a show, meta. Configure Mumble in real time, a very subtle advertising attempt to point to you, random show. Yeah, we know what you're up to. We know what they're at.
Yeah, good for them.
Our guys. They're all good guys over there. That is that's a show I've been meaning to put in the feed, but every time I want to pick a show that will be a sample show, they go mentioning certain people and how. So I skip that. SuseCon 2017, Ubuntu 16.04. This is JWP's one about nice about HTOP. And basically a rundown of the various different systems and OSs and how much memory they take.
Yes. These are good. Yeah.
I never have thought to go to SuseCon, though. Then again, I probably wouldn't go to a distro-only thing.
I've never really got into SUSE anyway. There was a department in university I worked at that were running it exclusively, but I've never really done much with it myself. But good to know more about it, actually.
And Ahuka did a show about insurance, health insurance specifically, and how it works in the US at least.
So, yes, Clacker made a comment. Shall I read that one?
Michelle, and see, when did he make the comment, Dave? He went back in time. He has a time machine. You see.
he's doing that thing that, we strongly tried to prevent. Oh, no, we didn't. We put the shows up and you can look at them ahead of time if you want to. So,
even
yes.
In a way you can set up your RSS feed to pull them down. But it gets very confusing for the old people who are here.
Yeah.
Did I miss a show? Where did the show come from?
It's strange to get comments that appear in the following month sometimes when I'm processing them. And then I thought, well, I thought I just approved that comment. Where did it go? Oh, it's gone into next month's slot. So, yeah. So he said, great show. Thanks for this overview of the underlying issues. As a point of reference, Sweden used to have full government funding and government provision of services except for dental care, when we have private providers. These days, all types of services follow the dental care model. The patient can choose where to go, and the government insurance, in quotes, pays for the services. It's called an insurance, but it's paid through the employment tax, and the premium is determined entirely by the salary. You can also add a private healthcare insurance and get access to further clinics and services, shorter queues, etc. Counties licensed providers, So while in some sense anybody qualified to provide services can do so, each county may uphold, e.g. a certain quota of That's private versus public providers. Okay.
Okay.
That's yeah.
Cool. It's actually quite good to, if we could get people to do shows on how, I think it's always good to look at other systems, because what might be obvious to you mightn't be obvious to everybody else, which would make this, you question your own assumptions, which is always a good thing.
Well, I wrote notes to myself on this one, tell myself to try and wipe my prejudices about this away and start from a position of balance, if at all possible. I'd quite like to learn a bit more about it and balance these things out.
Cool. So what's up now, mailing list discussions? Shall we do those?
We've got...
Or shall we do the comments first?
Let's comments that were...
So why are these coloured, Dave?
Especially for us.
What are you doing
here,
Dave?
The colour's going to get removed.
Oh, no, you can leave the colour there.
The notes go live. Well, the idea was that it was basically for me, because I forget which ones we've read the previous month. And so I worked out that if the posting date of the comment preceded the last recording date, then we would have read it. So I marked these intending that we shouldn't read them again on this show. So,
well, then why do you put them in? Oh, because they have to go somewhere.
They have to go somewhere. Yeah, yeah, that's exactly it.
Well, you could have, like, already discussed in the previous show.
Yeah. Well,
fine.
A bit of colour was nice. So it probably won't work on Internet Archive, actually, because I used a bit of CSS to colour it. So, and they strip out any CSS, I think, on the way in.
I don't think people will be as anxious as you get.
No. Nobody will give a damn. A rat's what do you call it? One way or the other. So I was going to switch it off before these go live. So in fact, we shouldn't even talk about it. In fact, we should edit this speech out.
Wipe it from your memory. If there was only a way to remove that whole conversation from the show, but as everybody knows, I do not edit.
No, right.
Bob Youngman said in relation to Mirror Shades show on the Toshiba Libro 100 CT, show 2187, dated last December. A quick and dirty way to find dead pixels is to press the LCD screen as you described, but apply the pressure when you power it on. I'm not sure what happens, but sometimes it seems to fuse in place and the pixel works again. Don't know if it'll work on an entire column of pixels. Good tip. Nice to know.
Wow. Worth, I never knew that. Yeah. I wonder how that works. That's fascinating.
So the next one was on some supplementary bash tips by Dave Morris, which was the one where you were talking about...
This is all the X-Glob and all that stuff.
Yes, that one. Yeah.
So, yeah.
Clacky. Starts.
Yeah. I've actually
and continues
got these...
on.
I've actually got these up on a tab on another screen here, just to confuse me even more. So yeah,
you're doing shows about this. So I refuse to read these on the grounds that they should be shows, and this point was made up. What a waste of a show! This is my comment seven after what is essentially three pages of show notes goes flying past between the two of you. So he's added it to his show note thing. So it's essentially
I was going to suggest that we skim, but there is a comment number three was he was asking how people record, which was
that's a good point. Yeah.
Which is probably worth mentioning, because it's probably a thing that others would like to contribute to, and maybe
read that out there.
How people record it would be interesting to have an overview of how people. Various people choose to prepare and record their episodes for newcomers to get some idea of what might suit them. The way I've done it recently is to write the show notes, and while I do so, basically play in my head what I will say about them, and then come up with sidetracks I ought to provide references to, etc. I don't rehearse, and lately I haven't cut anything out either. earlier I've cut my episodes a bit because I'd gone off track or there was too much ambient noise when I've been out walking. But now I'm aiming for as little threshold as possible before I publish. I had that one episode that I procrastinated for a year because I wanted to edit it down for length. Finally, I just published it. Worse is better for me anyway.
Dave, so, the only enemy of HPR is procrastination. I've said it before and I'll say it again. Actually, I've never said it before, but procrastination is the, and possibly its best friend, perfection. These are the two killers here.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you're right on both counts, I think. I've got huge backlog of things that I intend to do and haven't done yet.
But yeah, but you're working through them. At least you're producing shows. But, you know, quite often I've heard, you know, people have come on. Not, it doesn't happen so much now because of our, you know, if it's not a show, it's not on the server. But in the past, you would get people saying, oh, I'm going to do a show or I'm going to do a series on this. And, you know, you just never hear the shows or the series again because, yeah, it's too much effort. You know, we need to have shows coming through.
Yeah.
And great if you can put that effort in, and some hosts do put in the effort and produce high quality audio all the time. And if you want to start off producing crappy audio and work your way up to producing good audio, we can do that too. But remember, it will never be perfect. So, yeah, go for it. Which is why I've got ironing board episodes, Dave. Although I will refuse to throw my knot in the earbud down as one of those shows because everybody knows my patent is sooner or later going to get applied.
I'm looking forward to seeing the patent and yes, the diagrams and which way do you tie the knot and which hand you use to do it. It's going to be great. So I did answer that business about recording, but
go on, you can read those.
Shall I do it? On recording, I said, I also like to prepare notes first and as soon as possible after they're done, record. That way the ideas are all fresh in my mind. I use the notes as a structure, but mostly ad-lib the audio. Reading the notes is a big mistake as far as I'm concerned. Since the first HBR show I do not rehearse. This guy writes some weird sentences.
You're putting in an Oxford comma, Dave.
Sometimes I do
remember.
Are you
impressed that I know about an Oxford comma?
I think we need a show on that, Ken. Anyway, years ago, I'd gone into reminiscing mode here. At late 1970s, I used to teach evening classes in an adult education center, Pascal and Basic. I evolved a similar style there and constructed notes which became handouts for the students. Amusingly, they were printed on a line printer. Nobody seemed to mind, actually. And I'd written my own text processor to generate them. So, you know, geek always.
Yes, exactly.
As to audio editing, I do edit. I hesitate and a lot and deal with these by light, silence, truncation, and removal of a portion of patterns. I can edit a lot faster now than when I started, but it's just a personal foible. Without editing, I find my audio irritating to listen to and assume others will too.
Nope. Each to their own. I tend to either do... write the show notes first, like in a presentation bullet point thing, and then just ad lib it. And sometimes I will go around, just go for a walk with my MP3 player on record and talk to myself, and then actually not use that because then once I've spoken it out loud, I'll come back and do a clean recording. But quite often, what happens is if I start and press record and it doesn't go right on the first take, then it'll be 35 takes later, and it just gets immensely frustrating at that point.
Yeah, yeah, right. Yes, it's anyway. It's. I think there's mileage in getting
people do shows.
Yeah, well, there's mileage in getting more. I would have thought. But
and just about the other comments are about the use of echoes and stuff, which we'll be hearing shows about, which is good. Yeah.
Yep. Clacker's committed to doing a show on printf, so that'll be good.
So skipping over the shows that we're not allowed to talk about because we spoke about them last month, we're on to Desperately Seeking Saving RMS. And this was the show about Dodo Dummy trying to move over to more an RMS ideal on it. And RTSN says, it's a great episode. I'm looking forward to hearing more from you on this interesting project. So the following comment was on Hannah von Arch on Celeste by Hannah of Stera of Sol. Still an awesome, handle. And she puts in a link to the repo for that. And RTSN says, good, interesting episode. You have a great voice for podcasting for sure. Looking forward to hearing more shows from you in the future. Big thumbs up from people there. You still around, Dave?
Yes. You seem to be forging ahead there, so I was just...
I shall forge ahead, Dave. To Dave Lee's comment on more Magnitude's favorite show by Dave the Man Morris. Dave Lee says, CC license and subscription model. Still listening to the show, actually. Only started this afternoon. CC licenses are irrevocable, which was something I did not know. Also, you mentioned Amni Magnitudes changed their subscription model. Is this why you can't sign up for monthly anymore? To which Dave replied.
So thanks. I said, thanks, Dave. Your comment on the licensing issue is useful. I was confused by the fact that Magnitude offer commercial licenses by subscription, and I give a URL to it. But the license for non-commercial use is Creative Commons by NCSA, which I now understand is perpetual. I didn't know that before, actually. That's useful to know. The subscription model has changed. In the very earliest days, there were several, and you could buy individual albums, including on CD. I have a few myself. I think a monthly all-you-can-eat subscription followed that. I was a monthly subscriber for many years, and finally, about 5 years ago, they changed to only offering a lifetime subscription. I imagine this significantly reduced their overheads. There's a blog where their business model has been discussed, for example, and I give a pointer to John Buckman's blog where he's talked about his business model. So hopefully that answers Dave's question.
Yeah, and I did not know that about the license. It's very interesting to know.
Yeah, cool. Yeah. Dave's obviously very knowledgeable on this subject.
Well, he would be, being the man behind the Bugcast.
Indeed. So now we do the mail.
And indeed, there's a woman behind the podcast as well.
Yes, and they're both going to be at pod crawl.
Oh,
I was going to mention.
I can't get over to that. It is too expensive, Dave. Sorry.
So,
why
yeah.
do you do this? Why do you put shows in out of the way, hard to reach places?
Yeah, I'm afraid so. Glasgow will be expensive to get to, as will Scotland, because the festival's coming up and schools are just out and parents will be whizzing around all over the place, etc., etc.
So, should we do the archive thread?
Yes.
Go for it.
Yes. As in...
The first one is the discussion. Okay.
That was me waiting for the clicked link to come up.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Go on. On you go.
Yeah, about the guys are trying to put together the next ham radio roundtable episode, and they're just doing some discussions about that. If you want to join the HPR ham radio roundtable, then the suggestion is that it's 2017-06-14 and 1800, which has already occurred. Do you know if it went ahead, Dave?
I've heard nothing about it, to be honest. No, I hadn't spotted that the time had gone by.
Oh, yeah. They changed the time to 18:30, I think.
Yeah, that's weird. I honestly hadn't noticed that.
Okay, cool. Then we had... Yeah,
JWP was asking about last month's recording, I think he'd missed the email. It actually transpired that he was on the digest form of the HPR mailing list. So although he got an answer to his question very quickly, he didn't notice it because the digest had not yet been formed and sent out. So that caused a little bit of a problem. But we managed to resolve it.
Yeah, and I have some strange happenings where my... anything come from Hacker Public Radio is put into my spam folder, and I contacted the admin about it, and it's now on a whitelist. But today I saw that it's still not receiving all the updates, so not very happy about all of that. So the next topic was a community news recording schedule, which we had to shift because I have something on tomorrow. And there was a discussion then from Bob Youngsman that we should do a iCal calendar, which I think is a brilliant idea. And Dave claims that I said no, it was a stupid idea and I shouldn't put it on the website. Dave?
I did say in my email to you, here's the thing, and I think we should put it on the website. I don't think you actually answered. So
Answering is not.
So yeah, I think because Bob's point was that if you do that, then you can simply subscribe to that calendar, and then if you change it, if we change it, then your subscription gets updated automatically, which is fantastic idea. I hadn't quite thought that one through myself, so it's good to have his input there.
Yeah, let's make that happen somehow.
Well, it shouldn't be too difficult. We just need to decide where to put it and put it there.
Yeah, no, we can put it in. We can put it onto the website, but we can also put it into anytime there's a community news show that you are linked instantaneously to the link, and that the link is in the RSS feed in the show notes.
Yep.
So, do you want to tell us about the pub crawl?
Yes. Well, yes. I put and so many other business in these particular notes, but it's also comes up in the mailing list, so I didn't want it to fall flat. We are having the Podcrawl Glasgow, or Glasgow Podcrawl, whichever one you want to call it, and it's happening next month. Opens tab to find it. next month, which is, given that we're recording on the last day of June, it's probably not going to be that helpful to people. It's Saturday, July the 29th at 6 p.m. starting in the State Bar, Holland Street, Glasgow, where it's been for a number of years. And it'll start there and then go on to wherever. I linked to Kevy's blog, where he talks about all of the details, including the business about children not really being allowed in pubs in mm-hmm. Scotland. But it's pretty much covered there. So hopefully we'll see some HBR listeners and contributors along there. We're expecting Kevy from Tux Jam, McNallo from Tux Jam, and both from HBR as well. I think we're expecting Dave Lee and Caroline from the Bugcast, and we're expecting Andrew, whose name I've forgotten, from Linux Voice and Tux Radar. What's his second name? Terrible with names, can't remember. But anyway, he's coming.
Excellent, and I would love to go.
It's but just a
I don't
bit
know
of
if
a...
sitting in a pub, is it conducive to conversation?
It's not too bad. The State Bar is not particularly busy pub.
Yeah.
We do, and we don't go to the noisy ones. I've never actually seen the whole crawl out till 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning. I'd sooner get home, go to my bed. I'm that age. But but I think they try very, very hard to avoid the noisy pubs. So yeah, it's all, you know, it's older sort of wood panelled, old geezer type places.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Everybody turns around and you walk in. Why does that appeal to me?
Yes. There's certainly the ones with row upon row of different whiskies across the wall and that sort of thing.
Yeah, nothing wrong with that, I suppose.
No. All Irish nice. Whiskies. Very good. Yes.
Should we skip over the community news dialogue? Because I think that was covered there, was it?
Yeah. The only other thing, which again comes up in the any of business, was Marshall or Tim Timmy commenting in the thread of the community news that he's got the HBR UK table kit and wondered he's not going to be able to go to Og Camp, wondered if anybody else was and who he should send it to set up an HBR table. So don't think there's going to be an HBR presence there this year.
Which is a pity. I really like to get more involvement and get the tables going again because they have done more to promote the network than anything else, I feel.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Get us out there.
It's certainly in my experience of the tables at Og Camp, a lot of people express interest in who HBR is and what we do, and often great surprise that it exists and has been going for so long and so on. And then there's the, you know, a few promises of, I shall be sending you in a show. Not always producing anything, but...
Yeah, we've had a few.
We have had them. We've
had a few, yeah. Okay, Kuvnu sent in trouble with the admin account.
Yep.
The admin account is a redirection, and the spam checker checks to see if there's an actual account there and returns this isn't an actual account. And then you get a mail thinking that you haven't... you get a response saying that you haven't... It hasn't been delivered, when in actual fact it has. So I'm thinking of turning that into a real account, Dave. What do you think?
Well, that would help to solve it.
So we could share the password then.
Yeah. But I think... I don't know how these things are implemented, but I think that it'll be an alias list, an MTA
alias list.
Yeah,
it is an alias list, but the issue is that the mail server, the mail transport agent, checks to see if there's an actual user on the HBR server called admin. And if there isn't, then this message is sent out.
Yeah. But it could also be the list. It could probably also be the list as well as there being an actual account.
Yeah.
So, I think. I don't know.
Can have a look at it.
Some experimentation.
Yeah.
But I think that would be nice to stop that, because it's really throwing people
to get an
error message back.
And then there was also some issues with slow downloads, and Josh traced that down today to... It was slow downloads and bringing down the website as well, and it traced down to somebody downloading shows, all the archive. And there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. That's what it's there for. But please do it one show at a time. There's no reason to bombard the server. This server has been provided to us free of charge by anhonesthost.com, and we take down several terabytes of bandwidth and several terabytes of space. You're more than welcome to take down the shows, to download them. Archive shows especially, but go to the archive page, and there's a script that will download them one at a time, and you'll get them as fast as you would if you're doing them in parallel. It's just a little bit rude, because you're knocking down somebody's website, especially when that somebody's trying to make a living off the other users that are on the website there.
Okay,
very good point.
Go to the hall and think about what you've done.
And it was great of Josh to come back with such a good explanation as well. I really appreciate
that. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, he's a nice guy, and we should thank Josh again for giving us this resource here, because he's paying for this out of his own pocket. If you want to know who pays for HBR, the vast majority of the costs would be for us hosting all this bandwidth and stuff, and Josh pays for that with this company, anhonesthost.com. And we have a 15% discount available to you. Not only is he going to give you reliable, honest hosting, where he will tell you exactly what's going on, you will get a 15% discount as well on all shared hosting with the offer code HBR15. That's HBR15. Where have we heard that before?
That's ringing a bell with me. I'm sure I've heard that before somewhere.
Well, we might do something about that for pushing people over to archive.org, because those people are also gratefully hosting our shows, and they are they're getting funding, and donations and stuff, and they have infrastructure spread across the globe in order to be able to facilitate that. So if you did want to download our shows, you can get them from there. Just assume as somebody's put all the shows up there, Dave. Huh? How are you getting on with that?
Quite a lot of them are up there, actually, Ken.
Yes, they are.
It's about 1,400 are up there now, I think. I've not
very
checked.
Very polished, I must say. If you haven't gone to archive.org and our page over there, it's extremely polished. You should be commended for the work you're doing over there, Dave.
Well, thank you very much.
And you are being commended.
There's more There's more to be done, but there's a lot more to be uploaded. But the uploading process would be as helped quite a lot if we had a bit more help on the tags and stuff, because mm-hmm. I really like to add tags to shows as they go up if they don't have them, but they're the older shows, because the Internet Archive has some brilliant searching capabilities based around what they call subject and we called tags, and mm-hmm. it seems such a shame not to be sending tags up with shows. Obviously they could be added afterwards, but it would be great if we had a bit more contribution to the tagging process for older shows.
Yes,
we do get some contributions, I should say. Windigo has sent some in recently, which is very kind of him. But a bit more would be very much appreciated.
You're pointing at me, how can you do?
I think you do. Absolutely, absolutely. Why? Just tell me why.
Yeah. You're not angry, you're just disappointed.
That's it.
Okay, cool stuff. Anything else that we need to talk about? Any upcoming stuff? Any other business?
Well, the any other business has been covered.
That's nice.
But I thought I would chuck that in. I added a bit to my show note building script to do it.
That would actually be cool if people could, in actual fact, send you some announcements if they wanted, coming out on the HBR Community News show.
Absolutely.
At the end of the month.
Be more than happy to.
You can also tweet us at HBR. We've got a three-letter Twitter handle because we're so long in the tooth. So, yes. Tweet us your stuff and send in your show suggestions as well and topics. Oh yeah, I asked for a topic there on capacitors because I was thinking I'm getting my head around what a capacitor is and what it does. And then some throwaway comment Julian Ilette made about the voltage on both sides of the capacitor going positive at the same time. And he put the word "of course" in there. And that made no sense to me whatsoever. How, if it doesn't pass through current, DC current, then how does that work? Somebody, help, explain capacitors to me. Thank you, have a nice day, bye.
yes, it's physics, isn't it? But don't ask me.
Well, yeah, just physics that I can understand, mechanical engineer can understand, that's all I'm asking.
Oh, yeah. And it's a big subject because these things are getting bigger and bigger and bigger. These sort of things you can run your car off,
yeah,
not far off.
Yeah, but I just want to know: I thought it stopped AC current or DC current, and that AC current only goes through in out of sign, that it builds up on one side and then it's negative on the other side, and that it's just by virtue of the fact that you kind of got a vacuum. You know, think of it like a bellows or a bladder in the center that fills up and then discharges and then fills up and discharges, and then the other side experiences the negative as you filling up a positive on one side, you're negative on the other. I thought I had it, and then all of a sudden, oh, and I also want to know how a capacitive dropper works in a power supply, because that makes no sense. It's a resistor. Somebody, please help me here.
Yeah.
You'll hear
lots of Big Clive talks about them all the time. They're on the bridge rectifiers.
I'm actually looking at a screenshot here of his notebook where he describes a capacitive dropper. And it's a way of, for people who don't know, it's a way of getting a DC voltage from an AC mains power supply. And it's something about the inbuilt resistance of a capacitor, blah, 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 but... help me here.
Yeah. There's a smoothing element as well, isn't it?
Yeah, I know that somebody who understands this is going, Ken, you're just such a moron. There's no way I could explain this because you're talking about two different things. But series then. Do a series.
I'm on the moron train too, so yeah please. Somebody
I've got season
tell us.
Pass, Dave.
somebody help. Tell us the answer.
Okay.
Good.
Join us now and share the software. You'll be free, hacker. You'll be free. Oh, join us now and share the software. You'll be free. Don't forget to tune in tomorrow for another exciting episode of
Hacker
Public
Radio.
Oh, it's good to be back. I'm sure everybody else is thrilled.
Yes.
You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by an HBR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club and is part of the binary revolution at binrev.com. If you have comments on today's show, please email the host directly, leave a comment on the website, or record a follow-up episode yourself. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike 3.0 license.